at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. It has turned into quite the lovely day. Weather folks were promising that, but we had clouds for a good while this morning, and even in a few spots, some fog. But that's pretty much gone, and it's nice. It's nice. And, you know, second week of September, we're already into the 70s. Boy, you savor a day like this, because there's not all that many of them left. Looks like rain tomorrow, as you just heard Tracy say. We have a good show today. We have several guests, and we're going to be talking first in just a minute with Courtney Riffer from Voice, the Victim Outreach Intervention Center. A little bit later on the program today, we'll be chatting about a new development in MBA programs around the country. Michael DeSiderio will visit with us. And we have some other things planned for you today as well. First of all, let's say hello to Courtney Riffer, our guest with us here in the studio. Courtney is the Director of Prevention and Outreach for Voice. Courtney, good to see you. Nice to have you with us.
Good afternoon.
I can say nice to have you back, although it's been quite a few years since you visited with us, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, well, more than either one of us can remember, quite frankly. Courtney is with the VOICE. That stands for Victim Outreach Intervention Center. And we're talking to him today because this is Domestic Violence Month. Am I correct on that?
Yes, Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
Awareness Month. So we're calling attention to this continuing problem in our society, our American culture. And if anything, it seems to be getting worse, doesn't it, huh?
It shows up on TV a lot more nowadays.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's just being talked about more.
I think that's it,
as opposed to, there being more of it. We just don't push it under the rug anymore.
Yeah, a lot of times these issues were behind closed doors. So we're finally opening the doors and it's coming out.
And it's sometimes a big name and sometimes not. You know, there's a big name in Hollywood who just got fired for apparently years of sexual harassment of women. Harvey Weinstein, I think. I'm not familiar with the guy. Yeah. Some big shot, or was, some big shot producer, Hollywood producer. It amazes a lot of people that this could go on for years and years and years without anybody saying anything about it or doing anything about it. That's not unusual, whether it's a big, famous Hollywood type or whether it's somebody in, you know, Shakora or Saxenburg, right?
Correct.
Sometimes it goes on a long time without anybody knowing.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's a family issue, so we've always been taught family issues stay within the family, and we don't talk about family stuff outside of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what made it difficult. A lot of people don't come forward. Or when they do come forward, a lot of times the victims become criticized, and what did you do to cause it? Why did this happen? It must be your fault. You didn't stop it. You didn't leave. But nobody flips it around and asks, why did they do the abuse that they were doing? So it changes the perspective on how you look at it.
It's correct, is it not, to say that in the vast majority of cases, women are the victims of abuse?
Yes. A lot of times I do a disclaimer when I do my programs that, I always use he is the bad guy, she is the victim, not to offend people or tick people off or annoy people. I do it because there's a reality to that.
Mm-hmm.
Although men can be victims as well, and women can be abusers, and we also have the same-sex relationships where, that's not the dynamic there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's typically women, young girls, things like that.
You do a lot of, and I know not exclusively, but you do a lot of work with what I can refer to as dating abuse or dating violence. That's probably not the right term, but
no, that's what I use.
Really?
Dating
okay.
violence, yep.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I do a lot of work in the Butler County schools. I'm in every high school in Butler County except for one. I do a little bit of work at one of the elementary schools, and everything is relationships, dating violence. Even the younger elementary that I do, we talk about relationships from friendships, and then how does that change going into dating relationships?
Mm-hmm. So you would be dealing many times with kids. I certainly don't mean to be derogatory, but younger kids who maybe haven't even started dating yet or are very early in their dating years. Now, I've heard stories about college-age young people who don't understand dating violence and who, through lack of knowledge or a naivete or whatever, become victims. Sometimes that's a little hard to believe, but obviously it happens. But when you're talking about younger kids and you're dealing with a lot of them, they would have really nothing to base this on. I mean, you're starting with a blank slate when you're trying to make sure that they're aware of this, huh?
Yes. Trying to get them to get that healthy relationship foundation so they can find when things are starting to turn bad in the relationship. But you got to understand the basics of a healthy relationship. What should that look like? And then once the abuse starts to enter, they can begin to identify that early and hopefully get themselves back out before it's too late. Plus, I'm preventing it before it happens. That's the best time to engage this type of a situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it gets into the relationship, it's a lot harder to get out of it. The dynamics make it much more difficult. The abuser begins to isolate, so they don't have people to talk to. They don't have friends to hang out with. You know, maybe at that point they've broken trust with their parents, so they're afraid to talk to them. So they really find themselves kind of in a helpless situation.
Boy, you'd have a tough time. Just as a layperson, obviously, I don't know anything about this, no training or anything in it. But you know, if I were talking to young people, I wouldn't know where to start. You know, and you do programs in schools. I mean, like you speak at assemblies or in classes or something.
Usually in health classes.
Okay.
Most of the districts. One district I actually teach in their world cultures class, so it's kind of a nice way of adding an extra dynamic into that class. But no, I actually do a lot of work with gender stereotypes and gender norms, and the students usually can connect to that and how guys are supposed to be and how the girls are supposed to be, and then build the conversation off of that. And then we really set the stage for those gender norms. How do those gender norms now create the potential for violence to occur in the relationship?
Hmm.
And that's the progression of the program. The second day, we do a lot about abuse, what it looks like in a relationship, how it gets in there. And then the third day, we do a fun activity to help kind of wrap everything up. And everybody talks about their perfect first date. And especially with younger kids, we all know those types of fantasy ideas that they may have. And then we relate all that back to day one, that they follow the gender stereotypes, even in those dating relationships very early on. So it's fun. We're very fun, very interactive. They get to talk to each other a lot before we talk as a group. That way they kind of break the ice amongst themselves as opposed to me lecturing at them for 3 days.
So this is generally a 3-day program that you do in the schools, then?
Typically. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of cap off a little bit. We do a self-defense program at a number of the high schools as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually geared towards the girls' gym classes. And the reason we do that is you kind of see the unhealthiness of the relationship, and now this is when you're in a relationship and it is getting violent, aggressive, a tool to put in your toolbox to kind of deal with that type of a situation.
For anybody who's joined us a little bit late, and that happens, of course, during the noon hour, especially with people listening to the radio in their car, it's the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. My name is Dave Malarkey. Courtney Riffer is with us. He's the Director of Prevention and Outreach for VOICE. VOICE is an acronym. It stands for the Victim Outreach Intervention Center, and it covers all of Butler County, right? It's a Butler
Correct.
County organization.
Correct.
They obviously do programs such as we're talking about with Courtney here today, but they do a lot of other stuff too. They offer counseling for victims. They operate, VOICE operates a safe house at an address that is secret. It's purposely kept secret so that it's a place where perhaps a woman, even with a couple of kids in tow, could go to feel safe at 2 o'clock in the morning if that was
Correct.
What was needed, somewhere where they could be safe.
Yes. What also makes us unique, though, a lot of shelters only do women and children. We're unique because we actually allow men to come into our shelter as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we get quite a few over the course of a year. For the number of years we've done it, you know, a couple dozen have come through. So it's very unique because that also gives a safe place even if a father is trying to get out,
mm-hmm.
wants to take children with them. Other than us, there's not a whole lot of other options for them to get out of a situation if they need to.
Just wanted to make sure that people understood there's a lot more to the services that are operated by VOICE, the Victim Outreach Intervention Center, in addition to what we're talking about today, which is abuse in a dating relationship or in any sort of a relationship. I guess if you went to the extreme, Courtney, and correct me if I'm wrong because I'm no expert here, but the extreme of dating violence or relationship abuse would be either violence, hitting someone, striking them, or sexual assault, a rape. That would be the extreme. But there's a lot of stuff lower on the continuum, right, that would qualify as dating abuse or relationship abuse.
Correct. It sounds like you know my program. That's usually my lead-in.
Oh, wow.
A lot of times we focus so much on the extremes, the hitting and things like that, but we forget the parts that lead up to that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the story that I use is, picture yourself out on a first date, and you're in the middle of dinner, and just as you bend over to take a bite of salad, your partner reaches across the table and just clocks you upside the head. Most people aren't planning their second date. You know, if you get called a name, insulted, put down, things like that on a first date, we know this isn't a good relationship, and we get out. Something happened a year and a half later. You're in a relationship, and you're getting hit on a regular basis. There was something that occurred that kept someone in that relationship. And we call it the cycle of violence. There is a pattern to violent relationships. The details change, but the overall pattern's the same. And a lot of times when I describe that to teens, they can start to see the pattern, whether that's in a friend's relationship, a family member's relationship, but it's consistent. Every violent relationship goes through this cycle, this routine, this pattern.
I'm interested, and questions occur to me as we chat. This is a great topic to discuss at some length, and I'm glad you're here to do it. I've seen reports on TV, I've read some wire stories, about programs in some schools where they're trying to make sure that we're talking about older teenagers now who understand what it is to have a child, because they might have this kind of fantasy, I don't know, princess, prince, you know, thing that they're living out. Where they, I mean, they actually bring dolls into the classroom and they make the kids do what they would have to do to take care of a baby all throughout the day to make them realize, hey, this is this is not just some fantasy. There's a lot of work involved here. It seems silly to those of us who are adults, but apparently these programs work. So when you're dealing with younger kids and they're maybe fantasizing about a first date, they might have nothing to to relate to that's concrete. Man, they're really vulnerable in that sort of a situation. And nowadays, this is happening to very, very young kids. You know, certainly late elementary school anyway, I would
think.
That's
just it. I do a program in a sixth grade
school. Do you really?
And we talk about relationships. But I usually use a friendship because for some reason we have this really strange idea that there's a huge difference between a really good friend and a boyfriend or girlfriend. And what I get the students to realize is everything you want in a best friend is what you want in a boyfriend or girlfriend. The only thing that really changes with that boyfriend or girlfriend is potentially the physical element of the relationship. You're a little bit more physically attracted to that boyfriend or girlfriend than you might be with your best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as they start to see that, things start to click. Because early in my career, I was actually surprised the number of students that really made a big deal that boyfriends and girlfriends are so different than any other relationship that you have. And once they begin to see, you know, you want trust, you want honesty, you want someone you can have fun with, somebody you're not afraid of, you know, well, that's what you want in a boyfriend or girlfriend. Now, when you add that physical element, then we have to start talking about some other boundaries that fit into that relationship.
I have read that in many cases of even serious sexual abuse, sexual harassment, it's sometimes more a case of one person exerting power over another person than, let's say, a sexual desire. I've read that about rape, even, you know, the extreme, where it's, in almost all cases, a man exerting the power over a woman. What worries me is when I think of some of the popular songs. Now, I don't know I don't know what kids are listening to today, but you know, so many of the pop culture songs of the past couple of generations have talked about almost owning someone. Did you ever think about that? I'm not talking about the simple things like, you know, My Girl, The Temptations, okay, that's fine, or who Mary Wells did, My Guy.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But you listen to some of these other songs, and it's really, you know, almost a sense of ownership.
Oh, yes.
You know, and I'm thinking, wow, we never realized how unhealthy that was when
exactly.
we were thinking about it. You don't own your girlfriend or your woman or however you want to, I mean, that can easily lead to all kind of problems.
Yeah, that actually hit me. There was a popular series of books a number of years ago, and that was the first time it really hit me the how much the culture was influencing these relationships. That Twilight series that was out.
Mm-hmm. I didn't see it.
But. Because I was getting a lot of debates from some of the young ladies in my programs about it, I spent a summer reading the books. And that whole series kind of glorifies violence in relationship and the ownership that was going on between the two main characters and then another main character. And they were like, these are great relationships. But I'm like, look at the dynamics of what's going on here. Similar to the music. They own them. You know, I can't have a relationship with you because I'd kill you. I'd hurt you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to beat up anybody else that looks or talks to you. You get that ownership without saying it. You do it through your actions and things like that.
My boyfriend's back and you're going to be in trouble. Or lines like, I can't wait till I make her mine. Wait a minute.
There's even that popular Christmas song that everybody makes a big deal out of. It'll come to me. But where it's basically, she keeps telling him, you need to go, and he keeps using excuses to stay mm-hmm. in the relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to stay here. Maybe we can have some more fun. Here, have something to drink. But everybody's like, it's just innocent. But the thing is, as you were saying, it's so many songs that we're hearing now.
Yes, and I think adults are able to realize that this, maybe you don't really mean this, but if you're younger and you hear these over and over again, there's one song out of the past that... I just cringe when I hear it. Oh, it's I will follow him wherever he may go, whatever the name of that thing is. And I think, wow, this is very unhealthy thinking, you know?
Yes.
Relationship should be pretty much 50-50, I would think, you know, give and take.
Yeah.
Nobody exerting power over the other person in any way, shape, or form, and certainly not in a form of physical violence.
Exactly. And I like the way you brought that up. I mean, anytime we deal with violence in a relationship, it always comes down to an issue of power and control. Mm-hmm. No matter how it's defined, you can say I'm stressed, you can say it's drugs and alcohol. It's not. It's a power and control issue, which is really where I start my second day before I start talking about what it looks like in a relationship. It's how that power dynamic actually exists.
I want to talk about, and if I'm jumping around a little bit, I apologize, but there's a lot of territory here to discuss. Dating violence, dating abuse within a relationship. It may not be dating. It may be past the dating stage into mm-hmm. a relationship. That happens, too. And, we have a good person to talk about it with here today. Courtney Riffer is the Director of Prevention and Outreach for VOICE, the Victim Outreach Intervention Center of Butler County. And we'll pick up our conversation with him in just a moment. One of our sponsors on the program today is DBS Telecommunications, a telephone equipment and dealer and a data network installer serving our area, not just the Butler area, whole tri-state actually, Pittsburgh area too. What do they do at DBS Telecommunications? They sell, install, and repair telephones for your office. They primarily install commercial telephone and voicemail systems. They've been around. They've been serving the Butler area for the past 32 years. We know them well here at Butler Radio Group because we've been employing their expertise and their services for many, many years. Just a couple of weeks ago, I saw one of the DBS telecommunications technicians here at the radio station checking things out. They specialize in, well, we mentioned phone systems. They specialize in custom-designed networks, including fiber optics, the latest. They specialize in high-quality hybrid digital telephone systems, 5-year warranty there. They specialize in high-definition surveillance camera systems. They are so far beyond The early primitive surveillance system that we used to have is not even funny. They specialize in multi-door entry access systems, overhead commercial paging, and they also provide cabling for voice, data, and cable television wiring in both industrial and commercial applications. We've had them do that here. We use DBS Telecommunication. Maybe you should. Call them today. Find out what they can do for you. Phone number is 724-285-9088. And they're also on the web at dbs-tel.com. DBS Telecommunications. We will be right back.
For more than 130 years, the name Concordia has meant quality care. Today, Concordia Visiting Nurses has provided high-quality, skilled nursing and a variety of therapy services to people in and around our community. Concordia Visiting Nurses is here to foster your recovery right in your own home. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
Welcome back. Nice to have you with us today. Nice to be talking to Courtney Riffer from Voice. I was just chatting with Courtney during the break, and I want to make sure that our listeners realize some of them may be saying, wow, you know, Courtney does programs in elementary schools. Isn't that a little early to be talking about this sort of thing? The answer is a big no. Not anymore. I mean, when I was in sixth grade, the only thing I ever did was probably dream about kissing that girl in math class. Certainly didn't do it, but it's a different ball game now. It's a different society, right?
Yes, I was into video games at that time. But yeah, we do have to start earlier and earlier. I know I work with a lot of parents through some other stuff that I do, and many of them say, how do I have these conversations with my kids? And a lot of times I said, just have them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make it sound like it has to be some grand, we sit down, birds and the bees type talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Just make it a part of your everyday conversation.
Comes up at dinner, it's great.
In the car, that's the best time. They can't get away from you.
Oh, never.
If they try, just go faster.
Let me talk a little bit about older kids. I don't want to concentrate on any one particular age group. What about college age? Do you do any programs or outreach at the colleges and universities in the area?
Yes, we actually do. We do some of the very similar programs because, again, the dynamics are the same. So I can have almost the same conversation at the college level that I can have at the early high school level, that I can have at that elementary level. So we do a lot of the same programs, just vary them up a little bit to bring it up. We found out about 48% of college students admit being in some sort of a violent relationship at some point throughout their college career.
Wow, 48%?
Yes.
Wow. Wow. Well, I mean, that's an age now where relationships tend to get a little deeper.
Correct.
In some cases, a little bit more serious. In many cases, a little bit more intimate.
Correct.
So that's a little bit different there, but that's still a shocking figure. Almost half.
Yeah. Well, that intimate relationship adds a huge element to a relationship. As soon as the relationship gets that physical, a lot of times we don't give weight to the amount of emotional components that come with that relationship, especially if you watch TV. You know, they have a physical relationship. It's portrayed the same as playing tennis. You know, we do what we do, and then we shake hands afterwards, and we go about our day. But they don't give credit to the amount of emotion that goes into it, the bonding, those types of connections. And a lot of people just aren't ready to deal with that type of an emotion once they get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what kind of happens some of the college level. And what sometimes happens at that college age, as you're getting into those serious relationships, they start to remember maybe other things that had happened to them as children, because we do a lot of work with survivors of childhood sexual abuse and various abuses. And a lot of times at college age, going into the early 30s, is when people start to realize what may have happened to them as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And they see issues from my childhood experiences now playing out in my serious relationships.
I would guess as well that when you get to college age and, you know, it's a dormitory or apartment or independent living, there's a greatly increased opportunity for sexual abuse, sexual violence as well. And it could be rape. It doesn't necessarily have to go that far, but you can be sexually abused without necessarily being raped. And we hear about this a lot on college campuses. We hear about what in generations gone by, not me, this is before my generation even, but they used to talk about a Mickey Finn, you know, where you'd doctor someone's drink, or if you were out on a date, trying to get a woman drunk, inebriated, so that she would lose her inhibitions and you could take advantage of her. Well, nowadays they've got drugs that do that, and I understand that college-age women have to be really, really careful about this.
Correct. And the thing people don't realize is the number one date rape drug is alcohol without the other stuff.
Oh, without any pills put
in. And
that's
just it, because you get her drunk and then you take advantage of the situation. And it's interesting because Pennsylvania state law, if you are under the influence of alcohol, you cannot legally consent to sexual relationships. And I think that's probably the number one topic we really get into at the college level is what is consent. You know, we used to say no means no, but a lot of times we need to focus on the idea that yes means yes. And at any point, they still have the choice to say no and be respected for that. And that goes both genders.
Yeah, let's just not talk about women getting drunk. I know guys who would get very violent when they were inebriated, when they had too much to drink. I know a couple of guys who were almost uncontrollable.
Yeah, and there's a sort of a myth attached to that as well. Many times I've answered calls and I've talked to people who said, you know, he's only like this when he drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find is really if I can have a conversation with them beyond that statement, the violent tendencies are there. That power and control tendency is there before the alcohol is ever touched. So alcohol and drugs, they don't create violence. They only heighten what's already present. So there's that misconception that sometimes alcohol causes the violence in the relationship and things like that. And that's incorrect. The violence is there before the alcohol is ever touched.
So what do you tell, for example, young college-age women? I know when I was in undergraduate school, you know, the young women were told, if at all possible, and you're out at night, be in a group, two or three. Now, that's not always possible if you're coming back from a late class or a lab or something like that.
Well, one of the things that I tend to focus a lot on is trying to get the violence, the stuff to stop before it actually happens. Because a lot of programs out there want to teach how to protect yourself, but that's putting a lot of the responsibility on you, but it's the other person that's committing the crime. If I'm walking home after class to my dorm or my apartment and somebody attacks me, they broke the law, not me. Okay, so it's a lot of times we want to focus on, and then if something does happen when they do all these protection things that we teach, then they blame themselves because it still happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
But we're forgetting the crime was actually broken when that individual took it upon themselves to hurt, take advantage of particularly the woman. We do some of that safety stuff, you know, how to carry your keys and don't walk down dark alleys, but we got to stop people from doing the crimes.
I've heard people say, well, they should be a little bit more responsible, you know. Don't be out late at night. Well, folks, we are heading into the time change, and in about a month, it's going to be getting dark at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So a young woman doesn't necessarily have to be out late at night to be in the dark.
Exactly.
That can happen at 5:30 or 6 o'clock, even earlier in the dead of winter. I've heard people say, this is not me, you understand. I'm trying to think. I've heard this because it drives me up the wall. Some women dress too immodestly. They're asking for it. You're laughing because you've heard this too.
Oh, that's such a common statement. Because that's usually what happens. If somebody is raped, a lot of times they don't want to come forward and admit it because they're afraid they're going to be criticized for what did you do? How much were you drinking? Mm-hmm. What did you say? Did you lead them on? Did you do this? Did you do that? Wait, we've got to back it up again. it's his responsibility to not break the law. It's as simple as that. As we're sitting here, if someone come in stone drunk and naked, that doesn't give you and I any right to do anything to that individual. So the moment we decide to do that, we're breaking the law. And I think we kind of miss that message a lot of the times. Yeah, travel in groups, don't walk down the dark alleys. Okay, so bad guys hide in dark alleys. They hide in broad daylight. Sometimes they're your coworkers, your neighbors, your bosses, mm-hmm. What are you supposed to do? Lock yourself in the bedroom forever?
Yeah.
So I do a lot of work with men. Really, the world doesn't change until men stand up to other men and make the violence stop.
You said something there that also triggered something in my memory. In many cases, from what I read, an abuser will be someone that a person knows, not a total stranger who comes out from a dark corner in an alley somewhere.
Exactly.
But, a close friend, an acquaintance, a friend of the family, even a family member.
Yeah, as of right now, especially with adult women, it's usually about 95 to 97% of the time they know their attacker. With children, we even find children who have been abused, about 93 to 95% of the time, it is someone the child knows and trusts. But yet we spend a lot of time saying, how do you protect yourself from the stranger? Or when it is the stranger that happens, that's the one we hear on the news. Or we hear the big stories about the stranger that did this. It's not. It's your friends, family members, and things like that that are doing it. And even our self-defense program takes that approach. We're looking at you're already in a situation with your partner, and you want them to stop, and they won't stop. We're going to start there. I'm not going to spend time talking about guys hopping out from behind bushes, because vast majority of the time, not that it could not happen, but that's not where it's going to come from. It's going to be somebody you know, somebody you're close to, somebody you trust, somebody who's pushing limits. Maybe at the party you had a little too much to drink, and now they're going to push the limits. And that's where it tends to start.
So this is, it was when I was that age. I assume it's still that age. Alcohol is a major problem in terms of sexual abuse and sexual assault, particularly of college age people.
Yes.
Alcohol. Well, this is the first time for many that they're away from home, and the first time that they're, in many cases, experimenting with alcohol. Sometimes I think, so many European countries, it's very common to have a glass of wine with lunch or with dinner. Everybody in the family does it. Maybe that's the way to do it. You know, we don't have this forbidden fruit type thing.
Exactly.
So that as soon as you're 18 years old and you're away from home, you start, binge drinking.
And alcohol is a huge part of just college culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, heck, we go clear back to Animal House. That's the whole premise in the Animal House movies is, getting drunk at the parties. That's what you do. That's college. And to some people that might be, but to a lot of people it really isn't. So
it's tough, though, from your standpoint, to try to make people of that age understand that, I guess. Huh? I mean, that's an age when you tend
to
experiment.
Well, there's also the idea that it's not going to happen to me.
Oh, okay.
And that's another huge mentality that I got to work with, because everybody, they do everything right to protect themselves. It's not going to happen to them until it does. Nobody's really immune to violence in a relationship, to abuse in relationships, to sexual assault and things like that. But we have this idea that I'm going to protect myself and it's not going to happen. Right now, running statistics for guys is about 1 in 7 guys will be sexually assaulted in their lifetime. For ladies, it's 1 in 4. That's a lot of people that has the potential of being sexually assaulted throughout their lifetime. Mm-hmm. And the target age tends to be around 16 to 24, which covers that high school age and usually college age.
So when a relationship starts to deepen, and not necessarily even yet, deeply intimate, but just, it's you're going steady, to use an old term, and you get this possession.
Yeah.
You got this possession thing going, and that can easily lead to power and control, right? And so then, let's say from the woman's standpoint, she decides, well, I'm really not sure that this is a relationship for the ages. I think I'd better get out of this here, And then it would seem to me that that is a crucial time, because sometimes a guy can really start feeling threatened, start exercising control, quickly get violent in that sort of a situation. What do you mean you're leaving me? You know, you're not.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, and we actually find that is the most lethal time in a relationship, is when the one partner attempts to leave.
Hmm.
And as you said, the power and control. They got to maintain that power and control, and you're not going to leave me. And the best way I can deal with that is hurt you seriously. And I'm sure police, they find that too. Usually if they're leaving and it's a domestic situation, she was probably leaving at the time. Or he found out about plans that she was leaving in the near future.
Hmm.
So a lot of times when we work with victims who may be deciding they want to leave here in the near future, we start doing a lot of safety planning, how to prepare, what to get, what to gather, where to put things, how to hide things, just to kind of get themselves prepared for the movement.
It's almost one of those things where you think that, and this sounds silly even as I'm saying it, you almost need to practice this when you're in high school, you know? You get into a puppy love situation and you realize, oh, well, this is silly. The breakup, I'm never going to get over this. This is going to be the end of my life. And the next day, you're fine.
Exactly.
And by the way, that happens to both guys and girls. That's not gender specific. And so you have another relationship, and then you do that a few times, and you realize it's not necessarily the end of the world. So that when you get a little bit older and in a little bit of a more serious situation, maybe you can realize that, you know, I don't have to restrain or hit this person in any way. It's one of those things. It's a relationship that wasn't meant to be permanent, you know.
Yeah. And I even say that, too. Think about parents. You know, I don't know how many times, especially when I was young, my parents would make comments about, you know, when you get out of school, some of this stuff is going to seem so petty as an adult. But at that time, that was the center of my world.
Of course, everybody. I did. That was a way for me, too.
You know? Yeah, and you get so hooked on that. The other thing is, too, kids have a hard time sometimes seeing the future. Sometimes their future consists of what am I doing this next coming weekend, and that's about the extent of future and consequences and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, when I break up with somebody, that's what's going on right here and now, but knowing that down the road, things are probably going to be different.
Talk about, and this would be for older people, late teens, early 20s, in that age range, when you start really worrying about something that might happen. There's all kind of bad signs. Let's say, hypothetically, for example, a woman realizes, I don't think this relationship is going to go. And she's thinking about getting out, and she starts seeing, you know, strange signs. What's the whole concept of a protection from abuse order, or PFA?
That's a protection order that can be issued by the court. It's for intimate relationships, so you have to have some sort of a defined intimate relationship with that person.
So this is not necessarily a boyfriend-girlfriend thing. This is more maybe living together or something like that?
Usually intimate's defined as sexual,
mm-hmm.
Some sort of sexual partner. Now, if you are a teen and you have that type of a relationship, may not be sexual. We can look at doing something to help that out. But for the most part, it's a no-contact order. They're not the abuser is not allowed to have contact with you. In any way, shape, or form. That includes Facebook, texting, phone messages, and things like that.
Driving repeatedly past your house?
Oh, boy, you're touching on that gray area because people are allowed up and down public roads. So there's...
We've heard about this.
I know. The stalking is kind of a creature unto itself and how you do things with stalking. But, yeah, you're not allowed to have any contact. For the most part, they tend to work. However, believe it or not, prior to that, we have to do safety assessments with people to say, you know what, if this person's issued a PFA, are they not going to escalate and maybe hunt you down or try to find you or, you know, do something much more serious than they were intending to do?
You can see where that would happen.
Yeah, and we do that a lot. So usually when I do programs, I say, anybody that wants to get a PFA, call us first. We're going to do some safety checks with you to see if that's really what you want to do.
Voice does that for people?
Oh, yeah. Call our hotline. 1-800-400-8551. We'll do it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and you get an added bonus every leap year.
Is there a cost for getting help from voice on something like this? Is there a fee or something?
All voice services are free. Free and confidential. So there's no cost, no insurance, anything like that. You call us, we'll do what we can to help you. No cost.
Because a lot of people would not have even a basic understanding, for example, of a PFA. And when, in some cases, it might not be a good idea to get one.
Exactly. And sometimes, too, where do they get their information? Maybe another family member that's done it, or a neighbor or something like that. Call us. We'll help you with that. We'll look and see what your best options may be and then support you in that decision. Whatever decision you make, we'll support you. Because even people come into shelter, for them, maybe going back to the abuser is the best thing for them right now. And we're going to support you in that, too. We're not going to criticize you and put you down and, you know, wipe you out of our books now because you decided to go back to the abuser, which is the one thing that kind of makes Voice unique, because a lot of times in these violent relationships, isolation occurs. The abuser pulls the victim away from all of their support networks. They have nobody to go to get help. Voice is going to be there, even if you come back 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 times. Because the running statistic is somebody leaves a relationship 7 times before they leave it for good. Mm. So family members usually are throwing their hands up in the air by that point. But Voice doesn't.
It's another thing that I've heard from people. You know, there's a situation, sometimes there's a story in the news, and people would say, well, why didn't she just leave him? You know, why is she still... Why is she still staying there? Why is she staying under that roof?
Yeah.
Well, sometimes that's a very complex situation. Sometimes there may be financial concerns that she has nowhere to support herself. Maybe there's nowhere else to go. I mean,
yeah,
it's not just as easy as saying, why the heck is she still staying with that guy?
Well, one of the comments that I make in my program is that's usually us standing on the outside looking into the relationship. But it is fascinating because when you ask somebody why they don't leave, which is kind of a dumb question, but we do ask it all the time because we should be saying, why is he abusing? But we say, why did you stay? Any guesses on what the number one reason is? I'll ask you the question.
I don't know.
I love him.
Really?
It's the number one answer. Now, fear comes into that later, but I love him. There was something that you loved that got you into that relationship, that still keeps you into that relationship. And a lot of times they're like, he's actually a really good guy as long as he's not doing A, B, and C. And that's part of that cycle that I talked about. There's a honeymoon phase in there. That's where it's appears to be a healthy relationship. And then eventually the violence occurs, and then we go back to that honeymoon phase. And we want to remember the good times with them, the fun times, the fun relationship. Our mind begins to block out all the violence and the bad things that happen, especially when they get out of the relationship. We deal with that a lot in our shelter. As soon as they're now safe, they begin to minimize the abuse that had occurred to them because they want to remember the good things and wipe the bad things. Maybe it wasn't that bad. Maybe I was over-exaggerating. Maybe he really didn't do A, B, and C. But he did at some point. So really, it's a love thing. And then the fear of money and potentially children if you're in a domestic violence with family. Those issues are really secondary to, I love him. I just wish he would stop doing this. And we can go back to being a normal family again.
Folks, do you see now why, for those of you who were doubting Thomas's about when is it too early to start talking about this, whenever Courtney Riffer, our guest, goes into elementary school health classes, and we're talking later stages of elementary school, to talk about the first steps in what a healthy relationship should be, building that foundation of what a healthy relationship should be. We're not talking about necessarily an intimate relationship at that time, a healthy relationship. And boy, if you don't have that foundation, by the time you get into your late teens, your earlier 20s, you know, a young adult, you can get yourself in a bad situation if you have no concept of what a healthy relationship should be. Yeah. Courtney Riffer is our guest. We need to take a final break here, and we'll be back to talk a little bit more about an important issue. Why are we talking about it today? Well, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So it's an important time to kind of review these things and to talk about it. So a quick break, and then we'll be back with a little bit more with Courtney. And still later on the program today, we're going to be talking about MBAs and a new type. It's called EMBA. I don't know either. We'll find out from Michael DeSiderio, who'll be visiting with us a little bit later on the program today. Okay, quick break, and then back after these words.
Know the capital of Latvia? Well, why not put your trivia knowledge to the test and help a great cause at the same time at Connecting to Tomorrow's Trivia Night on Saturday, October 21st. Doors open at 6 at the Lindora American Legion Hall. Tickets are $15 each. It's BYOB and food will be available. Proceeds benefit Connecting to Tomorrow's mentoring programs. Get tickets online at c2t2017trivia.eventbrite.com. Oh, Riga is the capital of Latvia.
Looking for a way to make your company's benefit package a little more competitive? Here's one that's so easy, more than 130 local organizations and businesses have added it to their programs. Membership in Armco Credit Union. At Armco Credit Union, your employees will have access to the best loan rates and more free banking services, while direct deposit and payroll deduction options make it convenient for both of you. And best of all, it doesn't cost you a thing. Learn more at armcocu.com or by calling 284-2020. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is insured by NCUA.
Welcome back, folks. I'm just looking through some of my background material here. This was an article, actually it appeared in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We also had a news release from Harrisburg, and this was just a couple of weeks ago. A joint call from Senator Bob Casey and State Auditor General Josh Shapiro, State Attorney General Josh Shapiro, prevent campus sexual assault. So this is a subject that really needs to be discussed. And it's somewhat controversial because at the federal level, there was a directive that was issued a couple of years ago, and now that's being reversed in terms of how far do we go toward investigating sexual assault? Well, most folks would say we go as far as you need to go. But is there damage done sometimes when it shouldn't be? Someone's falsely accused and so on and so forth. So it's never easy, right? It's never totally black and white. There's always a little bit of gray area. In most cases, there's a little bit of gray area in the middle. Yeah, there can be. The month of October, we take time to focus on how we connect with people that we're involved in a relationship with. We talk about domestic violence issues. The statistics for Pennsylvania are sobering. The latest numbers I have, and I got these from Gloria Armstrong at Voice, and last year, in 2016, in the state of Pennsylvania, 102 lives were lost to domestic violence. Now, that's not just injury. There's people who were killed.
Yes.
In domestic violence. And in Butler County, three fatalities last year. So you see why we need to talk about this. And it's very sad that for many, many years it was brushed aside. I mean, this was happening in many cases within families, and it was pushed under the rug. It was pushed into the closet. We didn't talk about it. I can remember when I was, it must have been late elementary school, maybe sixth or seventh grade, something like that. There was a young woman who was raped in the town where I lived, my hometown. And that's what all of our teachers and adults said, don't talk about it. Don't talk about it.
Yes.
Pretend that it didn't happen. And that's what we did.
Yes, and then 1976 came around, and women started coming together and started to talk about their experiences, and that's when the whole domestic violence, sexual assault movement got started. So we're celebrating 41 years. I know that because I just had a birthday, and I was born in 76. So it's easy to remember how long the movement's been around.
I didn't realize that that's when it really got life.
1976. Huh. And actually, Pennsylvania was one of the first coalitions in the country to actually start organizing around these issues. So we were the leader. And still are, actually. Some of the national stuff is actually housed here in Pennsylvania.
So this program is spread then all across the country?
Yes.
Are we fortunate here in Butler County to have an organization like Voice? Not all counties have a Voice, do they?
We have some variations. What makes Voice a little bit nicer is we're comprehensive. So regardless of what your victimization is, you can come to Voice. Some counties may only deal with domestic violence at one agency, sexual assault at another. So let's say you're in a domestic violence and you're talking, but then you start to disclose you were raped by an uncle as a child. You have to go to another agency to sort of deal with that. Where at Voice, we can deal with everything.
If you are abused or sexually assaulted, a Voice representative can help you through what you might have to do, whether it's medical help or even legal help, right?
Correct. We walk people through. If somebody shows up at any of the hospitals here in Butler County for sexual assault, domestic violence, they contact us. We send advocates there to walk you through the process. You need to get legal help, call us. We walk you through not only the PFA process, the protection from abuse orders, but we also help walk people through the criminal justice system too.
Because let's face it, most people wouldn't know what to do. And folks, look at these numbers. 1 in 4 women will experience domestic violence within their lifetime. That's a staggering statistic. 1 in every 4 women.
Yes.
Wow. We talked about protection from abuse orders. Want to take a guess at how many were filed in Butler County last year? 400. 400. So this is a problem that we have here.
Yes.
No question about it. Whenever you are trying to raise awareness, and not only of the programs that Voice has, but just to raise awareness of dating violence and sexual abuse on campuses, what do you do? Because you can't go to college classrooms like you do with the schools, can you?
We get creative. We can work with some of the student organizations up there and do programs with them. I used to have a couple of sororities that would contact me, and I'd go do the self-defense program. And then
that's a good idea.
Talk to them about it. A lot of times it was right before homecoming, so we'd do those types of things. I have a lot of connections with the social work department, so we do programs in those particular classrooms, some of their crisis intervention classes and things like that. And then just awareness on campus. We have a sorority and a fraternity up there that work closely with us, and they've done some baked good kind of drives they're going to help with Domestic Violence Awareness Month, doing a few activities on the campus there. And when we work closely with BC3, we're building some relationships with there to get in and do some programming there as well. So
many college campuses are really stepping up their awareness programs, their crisis programs, even their alert systems.
Yes.
Where they'll have every so often, every so many hundred feet along campus sidewalks, emergency buttons, where if someone is, they feel like they're being stalked or assaulted or something like that, they can press the button. These, from what I understand, they're lit at night, so you can see them if you're walking along. I never had any of these when I was in undergraduate school, but what a comforting thing to know that you could run up to one of these things and get help right away.
Exactly.
From the campus
right to
police.
The police. Yep.
Yeah. I know both BC3 and Slip Rock University have those for sure.
Correct. So. And they even do a lot with helping escort people around if they need it. Police getting involved, helping with that, as well as other students to help escort people if they feel they need some extra help while they're, walking by themselves at night. They can help with that kind of thing too.
Hey, we're not trying to scare people here with these numbers, but by the same token, we don't want you to walk around with your head in the sand either and think, I think you brought it up, Courtney. This is never going to happen to me,
Yeah, and it also gets tough, too, in October because we're usually overshadowed by pink quite a bit in the month of October.
Breast cancer awareness month,
and sometimes domestic violence kind of gets pushed underneath. Sexual assault is in April. Child abuse awareness is in April. And actually, October is also bullying awareness month, which is orange. So this is a good month to be talking about bullying and dealing with bullying issues and things like that as well.
Domestic violence can occur at any age. It can be very tragic in young children. That can be just horrible to even think about. It also happens at the other end of life.
Yes. Oh, yes.
People in their senior years are many times abused and many times unable or feel unable to even report it, maybe not even realize it.
Don't even realize that's a big one, especially because it's family members a lot of times that can be abusing them as well, taking advantage of their elderly, feeble, more feeble state, maybe their confusion and things like that, but family members taking advantage of financial situations and things like that. So, yeah, and Gloria actually does a lot of work with that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's been on here a few times talking about
this. Yes, we've talked with Gloria Armstrong at some length. It doesn't help when we see in pop culture so many instances of abuse. Professional sports is so ubiquitous these days. It's everywhere. National football league, they're on about every night of the week. And if that's not enough for you, turn on ESPN. They have programs all afternoon and evening long. And it's not just football, but we have some, unfortunately, quite a few numbers of high-profile players, football, basketball, whatever, who are involved in abuse situations. Some of them pretty serious, sometimes fatal.
Yes, and those are the ones that show up on the news.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, there's probably a lot more that's going on that just hasn't gotten to that violent stage or it hasn't come out into public view yet.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that a lot with the movie stars as well. Movies and television stars, you know, you really like them, and then all of a sudden something comes out about what they're doing in their relationships.
In many cases, what we know today, I think there was a Baltimore Raven player, one of their star players a couple of years ago, who there was security camera video of what he did to, I think it was his fiancée mm-hmm. or something like that, slapping her around in an elevator and pulling her in and out and so on. And that was a real eye-opener for a lot of people who, I don't know whether they didn't realize the extent of this or realize how violent it was sometimes. There it was on video, and it went viral, and it was really ugly.
Yeah, but the bad thing is a lot of times when those high-profile individuals are involved in these situations, there's not a lot of consequence, or the consequence is more of a slap on the wrist than something that might actually be comparable to what was happening to the victim. So that's why sometimes we'll see it, but then we don't really hear what the follow-up story is to it and what kind of criminal charges were pressed and what the result on that was.
Mm-hmm.
We just watch the video of her, you know, being abused in the elevator, but we don't follow the rest of the story.
And again, it's a situation of power and control. These are not only very big guys, but they're very rich guys. They're all multimillionaires now. I feel this power
exactly
to exercise extreme control over these women. And sad situation. Well, as I said, our purpose was not to scare people today with some of these sobering statistics, but they are sobering. And it's kind of good to know that we have people like Voice around to help. You have a couple of events coming up. One of them is a race or a run or something.
Yeah, we're doing a Get Nebby 5K.
Give me the details on that before we wrap up here, can you?
It's actually going to be in memory of Missy Bardo.
Oh, yes.
It was one of the lethalities.
One of our fatalities.
And so we're doing it in conjunction with the family. So they'll be there. They'll be speaking and things like that. But it's a 5K. It's on October 29th. Registration, you can go to our website, voiceforvictims.com, and get some information on how to register as a racer. If you're interested, you can help volunteer with us. It's going to be, do we have our start time listed here? Yes, we do. Registration starts at 8, and the race actually starts at 9 o'clock.
October 29th.
North Boundary Park.
Down in Cranberry. That's good. Folks, I think the most important thing we can leave with you is this. Voice is there. 24/7, you can contact them. You have a phone hotline, right?
Yes, 1-800-400-8551.
Even if it's just a question, even if you're worried about this,
yes,
feel free to call, and there's somebody to talk to. And if there has been a situation that's developed, then they'll help you through it. Hey, Courtney, it's good to see you today. This was good to talk about, and I'm very pleased with our conversation that we had.
It's great
here.
Seeing you again.
Yeah. Courtney Riffer, Director of Prevention and Outreach for the Victim Outreach Intervention Center here in Butler. We focused a lot on dating abuse and dating violence. It's a big story these days. We'll do it again.
Great.
More to come on It's Your Turn here on WISR. Please stick around. We'll be talking with Michael DiSiderio in just a couple of minutes about a new type of MBA programs. So more to come here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. I want to tell you a little bit about hearing aid service by Kelly. So what is she offering? She is offering personalized one-on-one care. And isn't that what you want? I mean, obviously you want to be able to hear better, but personalized one-on-one care. Hearing aid service by Kelly. Your hearing aid will be measured to fit your ear and only your ear. And then Kelly will take the time to make sure everything is the way you want it. Obviously, from a hearing standpoint, well, it's comfort. For a lot of people who get a new hearing aid, and they don't wear it because it hurts. It's not comfortable. Kelly is interested in helping you, not selling you the highest priced hearing aid. In fact, you'll save thousands because there's no overhead when you're dealing with hearing aid service by Kelly. And by the way, you heard that correct. You could save thousands. Complimentary consultation. People who have made the change or have consulted and talked with Kelly are so happy that they did. Give her a call. Call the hearing aid lady, Kelly. Phone number is 724-756-4327. 724-756-4327. Call the hearing aid lady. Hearing aid service by Kelly.
October is National Cooperative Month, and Central Electric would like to talk about what makes us special. We are committed to serving our members with reliable and affordable energy. Central Electric is owned and controlled by our members. They elect board members from the membership, who are your friends and neighbors. Central is a not-for-profit organization, so if we collect more funds than needed to conduct business, we return them to members in the form of capital credits. We are dedicated to educating members, the public, and elected officials about safety and energy issues. We invest in our area's youth through our Good Neighbor Scholarship and Youth Tour programs. We help members facing difficult times through programs like the Family Fund. Central is committed to our members and supporting the communities we serve. This is Ken Molesky with Central Electric Cooperative, powering everyday life for 80 years. Central Electric Cooperative is an equal opportunity provider and employer.
Listeners, interesting topic to discuss for the next few minutes here on the It's Your Turn program on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest chats with us by telephone for a few minutes. He is Michael DeSiderio. And Michael is the executive director of the Executive MBA Council. And we're going to be talking about some new survey results that are just out. First of all, Michael, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us here on the program for a few minutes today.
Great to be with you, Dave.
Tell me, what is the MBA Council? That's something new to me.
Yeah, the Executive MBA Council, we're a group, an association of business schools that offer executive MBA programs. We have over 200 schools offering more than 300 executive MBA programs in about 30 countries.
So, and forgive me if I'm not up with the latest here, Michael. MBA, I mean, I can remember even back when I was in undergraduate school, some people were going for that. Master of Business Administration. Is that different from Executive MBA? Is that something different?
No, the difference is, so what I like to say is an MBA is an MBA is an MBA. It's a master's degree in business, as you've pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
What makes the Executive MBA different is primarily is the demographic which it serves. So if you think about the full-time traditional MBA, it's going to be a much younger student. Our students on average are 38 years old with 14 years of work experience and nearly 9 years of management experience. So significantly different than the person that would go to a full-time MBA program.
Now, are these statistics are fascinating, by the way. Are these the result of this new survey that's being released, Michael?
They are, and we've been tracking, for example, the demographic information I just gave you. We've been tracking that for many years, more than a decade, but that is correct. That's the latest numbers from what we call our membership program survey.
What about the number of women who are seeking these degrees? Is that up?
It is, Dave. We're pretty excited about that. Once again, the upward trend continues, so we finally crossed the 30% point where, the class is comprised of just over, it's 30.1 for those statisticians out there, of female students, which we're pretty excited about.
So what's new in the world of MBA programs? Are Are individuals studying this, are they able to do this online more these days than in than a generation ago when you physically had to be in a classroom?
Well, certainly there's a whole set of MBA programs that are fully online, dedicated to living in that space. In the executive MBA space, while there's no question that member programs, member schools continue to tap distance learning and technology as something that can enhance the learning of students, there is still primarily a face-to-face effort that exists in our industry currently. So the executive MBA program, while certainly hybrid components, as we would say it, you know, there is some distance learning that can be introduced in a variety of formats with many programs, is still a primarily face-to-face experience for most students, mm-hmm. which is one of the things that, at least currently, and that may change here, Dave, but that we find students still value the idea of getting together with that peer group.
Well, you know, that leads right to networking, which I know business leaders have been great proponents of for a long, long time. In fact, our Chamber of Commerce here in our community is very strong on get-togethers where you can network face-to-face with a bunch of other people. So it sounds like the same thing you're talking about here.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the things that we hear consistently from alumni, whether they're engaging with this peer group virtually or face-to-face, because of the level of experience that the group has, right, going back to that 14 years of work experience, nearly 9 years of management experience, that group not only enhances their network just because of who these folks are, they're working, they're fully employed for some time, so they themselves have their own network, and here you are tapping into that. But the knowledge that that group brings to the classroom environment is just hard to duplicate. If you think about, you know, let's just say 45 people sitting in a classroom with experience bases from for-profit companies, you know, marketing, advertising, technology companies, manufacturing, all studying together, not only do you learn from the person at the front of the room, but now you're learning from your peer group as you think about and solve business case problems.
Have MBA programs, or in your case, e-MBA programs, had to adjust to what is increasingly more and more a global economy, Michael?
Absolutely. There's no question that the programs continue to focus on that. The good thing about the executive MBA space, which has been a sort of a hallmark of our industry for some time, is that in addition to studying global economy and global currencies and the effects of the interconnectedness of business in the world today, most executive MBA programs, upwards of 90%, will take students and immerse them for a week or 2 weeks and sometimes even longer in another culture, if you will, to study business on the ground. So you might find yourself as a class in Shanghai for 2 weeks, or you might be in Barcelona studying businesses there. This is not like let's go on vacation for 2 weeks. It's how can we go and learn on the ground about what we're studying in the classroom, which adds a real-world component to the theoretical base that you're studying.
We're talking, listeners, to Michael DeSiderio, Executive Director of the Executive MBA Council. I can see what you're talking about. We're located just north of Pittsburgh, Michael, our bedroom community at Pittsburgh. We have a lot of new high-tech companies here in our area, and I'm talking cutting edge of high-tech these days, lasers, and it's surprising to a lot of people to realize how many of their products are marketed overseas, Europe, South Africa, even Southeast Asia. So this is important these days if a company is going to succeed in a global marketplace.
It's exactly right, and we not only attract individuals from sort of what you might think of as more traditional, larger companies, but entrepreneurs come to the industry, coming to the executive MBA space, recognizing that they too need to understand beyond just their maybe what might have started out as it could have even been something they started out of their home, and now it's expanding, and they recognize that now they've got to expand their view of the business enterprise, and an executive MBA is one way to do that.
So where do you go to find an EMBA program here in our area, in western Pennsylvania, for example? Where do you go?
Yeah, well, you have some great schools in the state of Pennsylvania. From, you know, we have a lot of members in Philadelphia. We have right there in, I'd say, in your backyard, the University of Pittsburgh. But one of the things you can do if you're a prospective student is go to a website that we run. It's called executivemba.org. executivemba, one word, .org, and it's a website that we've put together. There's no fees to go and, you know, get any of the information. The information's all there for prospective students to compare various programs. If they want to compare them within the state of Pennsylvania or compare them regionally, they're able to do that. If they want to look at, you know, does a particular program have a certain kind of concentration that I'm interested in. So executivemba.org can be an invaluable resource for prospective students.
You mentioned already that your recent survey shows some pretty significant demographic changes. Number one, candidates for MBAs or EMBAs are older, many times with 10 to 15 years work experience already. Do companies sometimes or even often pay for these advanced degrees?
Yeah, so we track that as well, Dave, and I'd have to say that every year we report this, whether it's good news or bad news, and we don't look at it as bad news, but we look at it as a continued changing trend where less companies are fully sponsoring students. The partial reimbursement for tuition, meaning you know, a company will invest in that student and the student invests as well, has stayed relatively flat, and then we've seen more students continue to sort of foot the bill themselves. And so that's a trend we continue to see where more students are paying their own way. The good news is demand for these programs continues to remain solid, which I think speaks to the value of them when students are even willing to, you know, at some point mid-career, late career, invest in themselves.
How long does it take to get an EMBA versus an MBA?
Yeah, on average, an executive MBA will be about 20 months, which isn't too far. We don't study the full-time space, but it's pretty close, I would say, 2 years. But ours is, on average, 20 months.
Are there statistics that would indicate the value of an EMBA in terms of a job enhancement or enhanced salary in the future?
You bet. Matter of fact, if you'll see it in the future, probably be doing another press release from a different survey that we do. But we do what we call an exit survey, and so we sort of take a sample of the population of students that are just recently exiting executive MBA programs. This is primarily a North American-based look. I should point that out. So we've looked at over 2,000 students, and some of the data that'll be coming out soon will show a double-digit return. So about, on average, these are obviously on average, about 14% salary increase on average for the sample that we looked at, primarily in North America.
By the way, that leads me to another question that just occurred to me. I know in our undergraduate universities in this area, we have a lot of international students. Are there students from foreign countries pursuing EMBAs as well, or is it mostly just American citizens?
Well, so no, we have member schools in more than 30 countries around the globe. Because of the structure of who the executive MBA programs are servicing, I'm not going to say that you never have a student from, say, you know, Asia come to a program in America, or the counter, you know, an American student going to Asia or Europe. That goes on, but it's not as common as you would see in the full-time space because these are folks that are fully employed. Mm-hmm. And so if you're considering a program, it's not to say that you couldn't travel to Pittsburgh to go through an executive MBA program, but clearly there's going to be a travel component there that may preclude you from doing that. You might be better served to stay in your neck of the woods, so to speak.
Our allotted time is just about gone with our guest, Michael DeSiderio. Any last thoughts for our listeners that you'd like to leave them with, Michael?
Yeah, I'd remind folks to keep an open mind as you investigate the executive MBA space, but do be aware that these are master's degrees programs, so these are not for the faint of heart. They're rigorous, but they are certainly well worth the effort if you are an ambitious person looking to take the next step.
And what was the website again that you shared with us a few minutes ago?
executivemba.org.
Michael DeSiderio, Executive Director of the Executive MBA Council. Thanks, Michael. Nice to chat with you about this topic today. Thanks for being with us.
You bet, Dave. Have a great day.
You too. One of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program today are good friends at Cummings Candy and Coffee. Not only just in downtown Butler anymore, they have three locations now. Downtown Butler is the flagship shop for Cummings Candy and Coffee, and oh my, what a flagship store. Since 1905, they've been at that location now for over 100 years, and it's just a beautiful place to visit. With the holidays just around the corner, Cummings offers corporate orders of custom gift boxes to give to clients. You can choose from a variety of different things. Chocolate-covered potato chips, they're fabulous. Chocolate-covered pretzels, graham crackers, cherry cordials. Add a half-pound bag of Butler's own proprietary blend of coffee, the Main Street Roast. Can't you almost smell that aroma right now? You bet. Yes, they have three locations now. Main Street, of course, North Main, downtown, right in the heart of downtown. There's also a Cummings at Butler Memorial Hospital, and Cummings West, the brand new store on Route 68 Evans City Road, out near the farm show. They're open 7 days a week. By the way, if you're interested in those corporate orders for holiday gifts, call Barry Cummings. He can give you all of the information. 287-3287. 287-3287. Oh, and peanut brittle. Peanut brittle is available now. If you've ever tasted the peanut brittle at Cummings, I don't have to tell you anything more. It's available right now. Another one of our sponsors is Butler Motor Tours, now booking for trips as we come up on the holiday season, including trips to Ogle Bay Park and the Festival of Lights down there. If you don't feel like driving all the way down to West Virginia and back, take the big coach from Butler Motor Tours. They'll be going down on two separate occasions, November 25th and December 9th. Also, a nice trip up north to the Titusville Railroad. This is great for the family. The Santa Express on the Titusville Railroad. That's December 2nd. How about country Christmas traditions and the overly Christmas lights? That's in Ligonier, in the Laurel Mountains. Lovely trip, December 13th. And they're also offering their one-day trip to the Pennsylvania Farm Show again. That'll be on January 7th. These and many more trips online at butlerbus.com or at their brochure. And you can still get one of those from Butler Motor Tours, a local company, South Monroe Street in Butler, online at butlerbus.com, butlerbus.com. We still have more to come on the It's Your Turn program today. Our next guest is Mark Olshaker, talking about our deadliest enemy, the war against killer germs. But I think we have another message, right, before we go to Mark Olshaker. So we'll be back to talk with Mark in just a moment.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines is not one worth having. The sports medicine specialist at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers will help you get back into action so you can keep up your lifestyle. Our experts understand that the same treatments for competitive athletes can be used for those who just want to be able to stay active. They accept major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more about how you can get back on the field by visiting TriRiversMSK.com.
Listeners, welcome on the next segment here on It's Your Turn on WISR. Dave Malarkey is my name. We're going to be speaking by telephone with our next guest. He is Mark Olshaker, one of the co-authors of a fascinating new book, the title of which is Deadliest Enemy, Our War Against Killer Germs. First of all, Mark, nice to meet you. Great to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
You are the co-author of this book, along with Dr. Michael Osterholm. Can you tell us a little bit about him, sir?
Yes, he's Mike is one of the foremost disease detectives in the world. He heads up CIDRAP, the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Development at the University of Minnesota. He is a disease detective par excellence and has been involved in hundreds, if not thousands, of disease outbreak investigations. And what we wanted to do with this book is to try to keep the unthinkable from becoming the inevitable. You know, Dave, we put many billions of dollars a year into national security, yet we're losing sight of the greatest national security threat of all, which is infectious disease, both naturally occurring and bioterror.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, when I first heard about your book, I was interested, number one, because we've just been hearing a lot about the Zika virus. But I was totally unprepared when I got the review copy. My goodness, it almost reads like a thriller novel. You've done a good job on this, Mark.
Well, thank you. You know, this is a warning, and in many cases a dire warning of things that people need to know. But it's also a great detective story. These are life and death mysteries, and we want people to be caught up in the high scientific drama as well.
So what about Zika? That's been the most recent, and actually that probably goes back to late summer as we were getting ready for the Olympic Games down
sure.
in Rio de Janeiro. It seems to have tapered off, at least the news has. I'm not sure about the disease itself.
Yeah, the news has, but we're still seeing it's still a mystery to us. We know about the microcephaly and other birth defect problems, but we're still learning about it. We don't really know all of the effects and what's going to happen. And the fascinating thing is that Zika has been known since 1947, but it was a relatively benign disease until about 6 or 7 years ago, when crossing the Pacific Ocean, it seems to have mutated. And this is one of the primary themes of infectious disease, which is we as human beings, we reproduce each generation about every 25, 30 years. These microbes, the viruses and bacteria, they reproduce every 20 minutes. And each one of those reproductive cycles is a new spin of the genetic roulette wheel. So there are many more microbes than there are humans, so we really do have a war on our hands, and this is national security of the most existential kind.
You detail in your book, I'm speeding on here because of our time limitations,
sure.
You detail some of the history, which I found fascinating, because we've been successful in the past, in past decades, malaria, AIDS, TB, among others, right?
We have, but we're in danger of losing ground on all of them. I mean, we have what we call our crisis agenda, which is the priority list of what's most important for our security and survival. At the top of that list is a worldwide pandemic, primarily influenza of the type that devastated the world in 1918. And frankly, even though we've got 100 years' worth of scientific and technological advancement since then, we're actually in worse shape for that kind of devastating problem than we were 100 years ago. And 100 years ago, it killed 100 million people. And then the next thing on the list is antibiotic resistance. We were in danger of going back to the pre-antibiotic era, which would essentially make medicine primitive again.
This is because of the overuse, when sometimes not necessary, of antibiotics?
Absolutely. It's that. I mean, bacteria have a natural tendency to build resistance, but we've got to slow that down, and at the same time, we've got to find new antibiotics. You know, you and I, we buy antibiotics when we need them in those little orange plastic bottles from the pharmacy. Agriculture, using them for food animals, they buy them by the ton, by the truckload. And so 60 to 70% of all the antibiotic use in the world is for animals. Primarily, we have it in the United States, although it's going down. But India and China are both huge offenders. And, you know, this is a worldwide issue. If we suddenly were attacked by aliens, I think all of the world's problems would go away in terms of differences in religion, in political philosophy, in nationality. And this is an alien invasion, essentially. It's us against the microbes, and they can outmaneuver us in many ways. So we've got to outthink them and use our resources.
One of the things that we're battling is the way that diseases are transmitted, sometimes through personal contact, sometimes through sexual mm-hmm. contact. And we also have mosquitoes and bugs that are a huge public health concern.
You,
right?
You've hit the nail on the head, Dave. We call the mosquito public enemy number one. Zika, dengue, yellow fever. We're seeing a huge yellow fever outbreak in Brazil now, and it could easily come to American cities. It's been a rural disease up until now, and you know, we thought we'd taken care of that 100 years ago, but our mosquito control is so lax now that it's coming back. And along with climate change, mosquitoes are in more and more areas that they never used to be.
Another thing that's relatively new, it's spreading rapidly, it's Lyme disease due mainly mm-hmm. to ticks. I know when the kids in my family had three siblings, we played out in the woods all the time.
So did we, sure.
You wouldn't dare do that. I mean, we never knew what a tick was. We never thought about ticks. You can't do that today, though.
Absolutely right. And we're just not paying the attention that we need to. This is the greatest war any of us are ever going to fight. And we've got to think of this as national security.
One of your chapters, and I love the title, Vaccines, : the sharpest arrow in our quiver. And yet in some quarters, there's still a little bit of controversy about that, isn't there?
There certainly is. And I would say in many cases, that controversy is fomented by people who've never experienced the time before vaccines, when diseases that we now give childhood immunizations for were rampant and killers. Now, having said that, not all vaccines are equal. The childhood immunization vaccines that we give should not be controversial. They are very safe. Dr. Osterholm makes sure that each of his grandchildren get them appropriately. On the other hand, our influenza vaccine is less than 50% effective, and we've been lulled into thinking that that's enough. What we really need to do, Dave, is to spend and use our scientific resources to come up with what we call a game-changing influenza vaccine that could really take a kind of 1918 flu off the table. If we could achieve that, and the science is there to do it, we would save more lives than, you know, all the wars we could anticipate. We would save more lives than all the lives that have been saved in American emergency rooms in the 20th and 21st centuries.
As you talk about influenza or the flu, I'm thinking back to a comment you made just a few minutes ago about how so many of these viruses and bugs mutate. That seems to be the problem with flu, right? Because the vaccine has to be reformulated every year.
Well, and the reformulation is just a guess. I mean, the simple fact is a virus like that, not to get too technical, but an RNA-based virus, the virus that goes into your body is not necessarily the same one that comes out. It can mutate in there. And influenza is basically an avian, a bird disease, that gets mixed with humans. Humans and birds mix these microbes very easily. And then when you add pigs to the situation, and there's a lot of cases agriculturally where we have humans, pigs, and poultry living in very close confines, the lungs of a pig are a perfect mixing bowl for human and avian strains. And, you know, most of the time what comes out will be fairly benign. But every once in a while, you'll get a 1918-type strain, and, you know, there will be hell to pay. Right now, in Southeast Asia, there's a strain circulating called H7N9. And in the book, in our book, Deadliest Enemy, we have a scenario of what would happen if a disease like H7N9 took hold of the world. And I can tell you, that scenario reads like, you know, the worst horror story you could imagine.
RNA. My goodness, I haven't heard that term since my AP biology. ribonucleic acid, right?
You got it. Yeah? You got it.
And I only got a B in that course, too.
I won't tell you what I got in chemistry, but Mike did much better.
Listen, our time, this is a very, very fascinating book. Deadliest Enemy, Our War Against Killer Germs. Is the book available, Mark?
The book is available now. You can get it at your local bookstore, at Barnes & Noble. You can get it on Amazon, anywhere you like. And we just feel these are things that the average citizen has to know, and it's also a great scientific adventure story, we hope.
Mark Olshaker, co-author, along with Dr. Michael Osterholm, of Deadliest Enemy. Thanks, Mark. Nice to talk with you
today. Thank you, Dave. You've been a great host.
Thanks very much.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 9292. The pick three is 713713. The pick four is 0868. The pick five, 73274. The wild ball for each of those, one. The treasure hunt, 10, 12, 19, 28, and 30. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
Tanglewood, your hometown center for entertainment, presents an evening of comedy and mystery Saturday, October 21st.